feels great, baby.
I will be back here. I will be back here, and I will be back for the vengeance. You will not get the best of me.
Welcome to Fourth and Goal Podcast. We are back. Two pods, 1 week. Me and Matt are working. We're trying to get as much content out to you guys as possible before the combine starts, before who knows when the league year will start. But we're going to try to get as much out as possible for you guys. Matt, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing much, dude. You know, it's all starting to heat up. It's all starting to warm up, right? Everything's starting to come together. This is what we're here for. Yeah. This is why the NFL offseason is good and bad. Because we're going to have this nice big spike at the combine and all the interviews and all the player analysis. And then we're going to go into a little bit of a lull before free agency kicks off. Free agency will kick off. It'll get real big. Everybody excited. Then a little bit of a lull. Then the draft. And then a lull. It's ebbs and flows of the offseason. And we're coming into a really big crescendo with the combine. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is the Fourth and Goal Podcast. I'm Javi. That is Matt. Check out the podcast on all podcast platforms. Google, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever your podcast is found. Subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate those. And follow the podcast on Twitter at Fourth and Goal Podcast. The Niners have been in the news. Nothing crazy, just the normal stuff that most 49ers have expected. Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, George Kittle. A couple of things we'll get to with Jet McKinnon, Marquise Goodwin as of today, Dante Pettis, and then, of course, the unwavering support of Jimmy Garoppolo. But let's start off with the big ones, man. The big ones are the two big men in the middle for this 49ers defensive line. And the most pressing issue is Eric Armstead. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of discussion on what the Niners should do, and there's a lot of discussion on what the Niners are doing right now at the combine, where they are gauging trade interests, gauging interests across the league on what Eric Armstead's value is to other teams. Where do you stand on this?
The only thing the 49ers can do with Eric Armstead is just let him walk. That's my biggest. You can't just let him walk, because if you do, the only thing you're going to get is a 2021 third round pick, because you know he's going to get paid in the threshold that's going to get you in the comp picks. He's going to make his money regardless. I'm still pro keep the band together if they can afford it. The salary cap is a myth. But that seems like it's kind of coming to a head right now for the 49ers. They have a lot of guys that got to pay. You mentioned Defoe and George Kittle. Both are due, and both need to get extended. Eric Armstead, he's a fantastic, fantastic player this year. The 49ers would not be, you know, in the Super Bowl without him. It's very easy to say that. But I don't know. As every day goes on and on and on, there was a report that came out and said they'd be fine tagging him. But tagging him doesn't mean he's going to be back. That very well means he could be traded. Yeah. They could do the non-exclusive tag and let other teams negotiate with him and see what he would get on the open market, sort of thing. There's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of different factors. The only thing they can't do is let him walk, whether it's tag and trade him, or tag him and keep him, or tag him and sign into a long-term deal, whatever. They just can't let him leave the building without getting compensation for him.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Now, with the tag and trade, the thing that becomes an issue is timing, the timing of the tag and trade. So with that, we were talking about it before, is the Niners, they can tag him, but the league knows they can't keep him because of their cap restrictions. Mm-hmm. So if you're tagging him, he's going to eat up most of your salary cap anyway. So the way, if you're going to tag him, kind of do what the Kansas City Chiefs did, tag him, trade him, get him out of there before, you know, you free agency really, really gets kicked off, mm-hmm. and you're in a position to go ahead and go after other players. And another, you know, the thing with the Eric Armstead thing, if you sign him, that also sets off another domino with DeForest Buckner. You basically set the floor for DeForest Buckner as well. So, yeah. For example, you sign Eric Armstead to a $62 million deal. You know, he's getting, or $62 million guaranteed. He's getting a little bit less than Fletcher Cox. Most of us would agree that DeForest Buckner is a better player than Eric Armstead. That is his floor. You're not paying Buckner less than Armstead. So now you're paying over $120, $130, $140 million in guaranteed money to two positions on your defensive line. That doesn't seem like a winning formula going forward. So the tag and trade has got to be the best option, and it's all about the timing. They have to figure out something this week at the combine, gauge the interest around the league. I'm sure there's teams that would happily send a second and a third, or a second and a fourth, to acquire Armstead services if they can afford him. I don't want to see Armstead leave. I'm with you on the keep the band together thing, but they are in a bind with the salary cap. I know we talked about it last time, where you keep him, you let Sanders walk, but if you can get equal to very close to his production via somebody in the draft, or you go get that in free agency to replace him, you can kind of manage it a lot better. And I think the biggest thing that kind of hit me today was, if you sign Armstead, that kind of sets the floor for Buckner, and that's where spending, then there's no unlimited number with the cap space, so there's no way you can do that where you have, example, $62 million guaranteed to Armstead, and then you know Buckner's going to want to come in maybe $5, $6, $7, maybe $10 million higher on the guaranteed side, because he has no injuries, he doesn't miss games, he's a leader in the locker room, he's a captain of this team, he's been a consistent force since he's been drafted, so that just makes things a lot harder.
Yeah, the 49ers put themselves in a bind by drafting all these guys in the first round to play defensive line, and then having most of them pan out. This is what happens. You draft players well, they get really good, then they're going to get paid in free agency. That's just how the NFL works. The trick is you have to continually replenish all of that talent. And I think you said it right. They don't need to find necessarily a player of Armstead's caliber. They can moneyball this a little bit, right? They can go the Oakland Athletics route, and they can say, all right, we can't get 10 sacks out of one player, but we can get it out of two. And we can have two guys that can come in and do what he did. And rotate snaps and stuff. And so that's really what they're going to have to do, because you can't spend all of this money on your defensive line. Because if you think about it, look, D Ford, there's an out. They're probably going to get out of that contract as soon as they can. I know he's very good. They're going to want to lock Bosa up long term. Bosa is going to be due the biggest contract for a defensive end in NFL history. That's something that's coming down the road, right? George Kittle, we're going to talk about him in just a minute. He's due for the biggest contract in tight end history. When you get these stud players that are going to play for relatively cheap, and obviously Bosa's playing for a decent chunk of change because he was second overall pick, but you get these players that are playing for cheaper than what they're worth because they're on rookie deals, you're going to have to pay out, and you can't pay everybody. You can't. I would love to see him stay, just as we get closer and closer and closer to the tag deadline and the time to tag him and stuff. It seems like it makes more sense to trade him. Trade him, replenish the draft picks that you don't have, because the 49ers draft in the first and then they don't draft again until the fifth. That's no day two picks. It's not drafting until the middle of day three. There's just so many players are going to go off the board between then. Now, I don't expect them to stay at 31. No. I don't expect them to stay at 31. I expect them to trade out of that, because teams will overpay to jump back into the first round and get the fifth round option. We saw the Ravens do it with Lamar Jackson. It's just a luxury you do pay for. We saw the 49ers do it to get Reuben Foster, right? You overpay to come back in the first because you have that fifth-year option. I think he's going to end up being traded. Kind of sucks because, you know, him and Buckner came through college together. They were both drafted by the 49ers. They wanted to stick together. They played really well together. Armstead, for all it seems, is a great locker room guy. I don't see a way that they can keep everybody. You're eventually going to have to move on from people. And Armstead, he might just be the odd man out in this one.
Yeah, and, you know, the other scenario that I floated out and people have floated out is, trading Dee Ford, but the out on his contract isn't until next year, so there'd be some dead cap there. Whereas if you trade a Dee Ford, you can somewhat justify keeping Armstead and Buckner together and then using 31 or whatever multitude of picks you get from Ford to get another pass rusher, which I still think the Niners need another pass rusher in this draft or in this free agency period just because of the injuries that they did sustain this last season. So that's another option there. As far as DeForest Buckner, I think it's just a no-brainer. You're going to pay the guy. Yep. And the comp to him is Fletcher Cox. He's not going to get Aaron Donald money. Nope. But Fletcher Cox got paid 3-4 years ago at $63 million guaranteed. And that's all. That's really what matters is the guaranteed money. I know the average per year is what people like to discuss. You know, they all freaked out with Jimmy Garoppolo's contract and Quan Alexander's contract and these guys' deals when they were signed. But when you really dig into the contracts, you got to focus on those guarantees. So with DeForest Buckner, I think you're going to looking at a player who's going to be in that $70 to $72 million guaranteed money. And then his average annual, you know, should be anywhere between 17 and 18. And that's kind of where he's going to be. And you pay a guy like that. Like I said, he's been consistent. He's never hurt, knock on wood. He's a captain of this team. He's the heart of this defense. And then, you know, you have other guys coming up in the next year. You have Fred Warner that needs to get paid. You just can't keep everybody. But if you can keep your core guys, you keep them. And that DeForest Buckner is one of those guys. So, I mean, I think 49ers fans should be prepared to see a $70 million, $72 million guaranteed deal headed DeForest Buckner's way.
Yeah, I mean, we had the question last week in the mailbag when they asked you, who are the core players? Who are the ones that you pay? And who are the ones that you kind of have to keep around no matter what? And DeForest Buckner is on both our lists. We both said him. It's the anchor of the defensive line. It's somebody you have to have on your team. Like you said, Buckner's an iron man. He's played so many snaps. And, you know, thank goodness he's not a running back because he doesn't take the same wear and tear. He opened up so much for Bosa, Armstead, Ford, all these guys. That defensive line was crazy, but still Buckner was facing a ton of double teams all year long. I think when you look to him between him and Armstead, I think it's very clear that you have to keep Buckner over Armstead. Again, Armstead, fantastic player, but do the 49ers think they can get the same production out of Ronald Blair, Julian Taylor, DJ Jones, and Kentavious Street, all of which ended up on IR this year? Right, they have a lot of players coming back from the IR that are young and cheap, and if they feel strongly about them and they can stay healthy and come back and contribute, it might be the time to move on from Armstead. But Buckner's not that guy. You don't move on from him. You pay the man, you keep him around. Seventh overall pick. I've never heard a peep from him that wasn't positive. Good locker room guy, very well liked. You know, team captains are voted on. So this isn't like some coach going, he's a really good player, we're going to make it. No, the team chooses their captains, and they chose DeForest Buckner. You got to keep him. You got to pay him. And again, it's just Eric Armstead might be the odd man out. But let's go on to the next guy you got to pay. It's George Kittle.
Yep.
Best tight end in football. Not even close. Travis Kelce's pretty good, I guess. We have to say it. But yeah,
he's all right.
You know, one and two are Kittle and Kelce in that order. Kittle's going to get paid. He's a fifth-round draft pick. He's playing for pennies at this point.
Yeah.
So where do you think his contract ends up?
So I thought this before the season was ending. George Kittle is essentially a left tackle, a right tackle, a fullback, a wide receiver, and a tight end.
Yeah.
So you get into that conversation. I don't know if people remember. Jimmy Graham was in a contract dispute with the Saints about how he should be paid, whether a wide receiver or a tight end. I think that came down to like his tag number and things like that. So when you're looking at George Kittle, his value to this team is more than just a tight end. Add in his locker room presence, add in his on-field energy. Those things matter to teams. And David Lombardi had a really good piece on it. Expect Kittle to break the bank and break the average annual per year at, you know, roughly $16, $17 million. And I'm not surprised at that number at all. You know, people wanted to say $10 to $12 million. $10 million is for Jimmy Graham. George Kittle is 200% better than Jimmy Graham right now.
Even Jimmy Graham's prime, because now Jimmy Graham's running exactly through wet cement and oatmeal. But, yeah.
Exactly. So if you just did the on inflation, on just the way the salary cap is going, you're going to look at a $16, $17 million player. Now, the number one wide receiver, based on his average annual salary, is Julio Jones. He's getting $22 million. Is Kittle $12 million less of a player than Julio Jones? No.
Absolutely not.
Maybe six, maybe seven. Michael Thomas is, I want to say, $18 or $19 million. Is George Kittle equal value to Michael Thomas? Yeah, because his value to this 49ers team. So I would anticipate a contract to be in that range, $16, $17 million, because he's a tight end. He's not going to get Michael Thomas money, but he's going to break the guaranteed number for sure. The last guy that got paid as a tight end was Trey Burton. You know what his guaranteed money is?
Tell me.
$22 million guaranteed. George Kittle is 400% better than Trey Burton.
At least. At least. When I look at this contract negotiation, Kittle's going to break the bank. I think he's worth Michael Thomas money. What he does for the 49ers team, I think he's worth it. The problem George Kittle has is George Kittle plays a position that traditionally doesn't get paid. And we see that with the lack of talent around the NFL when you look at the tight end position. If you played fantasy football this year, you know how difficult it was to get solid production out of the tight end spot if you didn't have one of the top, like, four guys, right? Talent falls off a shelf, falls off a cliff, falls into the Grand Canyon after the top guys. That's just how it goes for the tight end position. So he's not in a position to say, George Kittle isn't in a position to say that I want $20 million a year. Now, if he walked into my office and said, I want $20 million a year, I'm like, hey, here you go. Here's your contract. I'll pay you that because that's what you're worth to me. My favorite little story about this is it just came out, I think it was today or yesterday. Kittle and Trent Taylor and Levine Toilolo and a couple other guys were down partying in Cabo, Mexico, enjoying their first little break of the offseason. And they ran into Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan and his wife. And George Kittle tried to talk to Mrs. Shanahan and tell her something on the sly and keep it on the DL. And then she immediately blabbed to Kyle. And George Kittle said, I love San Francisco. I love the team. I love the franchise. I love playing there. Don't tell your husband I'm trying to negotiate a new contract. And Mrs. Shanahan, bless her heart, just walked right over to Kyle and said, he wants to be here. So now, I don't think that's going to affect the negotiations at all. I think it's a nice little fun story that everybody can laugh about.
Yeah.
But
he was never leaving to begin with.
Right. They're not letting him get out the door. I don't know if he gives a hometown discount. I don't think he should. But he might. George Kittle seems like that kind of guy that he might knock a little bit off the top. He might not ask for Michael Thomas money. He might want $17 million a year. He might want 60. Whatever it is, pay the man. He's worth every goddamn penny. We saw how different this 49ers team was this year when he was out. We saw how many key plays he made down the stretch. We saw how infectious his attitude is. We saw how much of a leader he is on the field. There's so many things that George Kittle does that other players don't do. You're not going to replace him. And the fact that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan found this kid in the fifth round.
Yeah.
This is like a Tom Brady-like story to me. Everybody loves Tom Brady. He was the 199th pick in the sixth round, all that stuff. George Kittle was at the ninth tight end taken. Tight end's not a huge position. It doesn't get drafted a ton every year. He's like the ninth one taken. There's eight teams that said, you know what? We like this tight end better than we like George Kittle. And that's absurd to me. So he's going to get paid. He needs to get paid. Yeah, O.J. Howard was one of them. He's probably being traded this offseason.
I wouldn't doubt it, yeah.
There's just a whole bunch of guys. And O.J. Howard is supposed to be the next Vernon Davis, right? Yeah. He's supposed to be the next great tight end, and he hasn't done much at all. Because he can't separate and he can't catch the ball when he put it on his hands. George Kittle catches everything. He blocks people into the dirt. He laughs like a maniac while doing it. And he has fantastic hair. I'm all about it. So George Kittle's going to get paid.
Yeah, in this free agency period, Austin Hooper is not going to be tagged in Atlanta. Right. So yep. Hooper is going to be the floor. So, you know, the value of George Kittle will be based on Hooper. And if Hooper's getting $12 million, you best believe Kittle is going to get more than that.
15, 16 mil at least.
Yeah. This is just the way these things are going to go. And, you know, I had someone in my mention saying, "What are you concerned with Kittle's injury history?" No. The guy played with broken ribs. He's playing with a torn labrum. He played with a broken ankle. Those injuries aren't from, you know, they're not from him doing something weird. He's from it's from contact. You know, guys who tweak their ankle, you know, just walking down the steps. That's when I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. But Kittle taking a big hit, breaking a rib, and still playing through it. Kittle breaking his ankle. We saw the zoomed-in photo on that Thursday night game where he got hit in his knee and his leg buckles back. You know, those are fluky type issues. So I'm
he's
not
still trying to play. He's still trying to play the rest of that game. Kyle,
he scored a touchdown right after.
Like, Kyle had to tell him to get on the sideline. It's stop coming on the field.
Yeah, he still finished with a hell of a game, and he was out. You know, he didn't finish the game, but he played the other. You know, up to, I think two and a half quarters. You know, almost three quarters.
Yep.
And that happened on like the third play of the game. So Kittle is a guy I'm not worried about at all, and I think 49ers fans just need to prepare for that large contract, and I'm pretty sure the bitching will ensue after he signed. On why'd they spend this much money, et cetera, et cetera. One thing, that's not my money. That's Jed York's money. However they choose to spend it, spend it. When you're spending it on blue-chip players like a DeForest Buckner, like a George Kittle, like a Mike McGlinchey, who will be due soon too, like guys like Joe Staley, you do those things. That's how good football teams sustain. I know where people talk about the Patriots. No, they pay the players that they want. There's a reason Stephon Gilmore got paid. There's a reason Darrell Revis got paid. There's a reason... Randy Moss got paid. There's you pay the right guys, and Kittle is the right guy. So I have no issue there, and I think those numbers and things like that will come down soon once the CBA stuff is resolved, and that's kind of putting a delay on everything. So we may get a draft without a free agency period, to be quite honest with you, if this thing keeps going the way it's going. But a couple quick things if we want to get into it, because we're going to get into our draft crushes. So we'll do a rapid fire here. Jet McKinnon has been spoken about as a guy who's going to take a pay cut, who wants to do anything he can to stay on this team. What say you on this? Redo the deal, keep him around. What do you think?
Shanahan loves to keep these guys around. Shanahan, this is one of his flaws. He can't move on. Once he has it in his head that he has a guy, he can't really move on from him. If Jet McKinnon wants to come in and play for peanuts, I'm in. I believe he kind of will, because he's been paid like a top-tier running back for 2 years and he hasn't played a meaningful snap.
Or a snap, actually.
Yeah. So he's like, well, he played like some preseason snaps, but like he hasn't played a regular season snap. So if he wants to come in and play for peanuts, I'm cool with it. Otherwise, you're going to have to move on from him.
Marquise Goodwin, trade value. What's his trade value?
I mean, not much. I broke it down earlier today. So he was a $3.9 million cap hit for the 49ers this year. He had 12 catches for 186 yards and one touchdown. So if you break down the numbers, that was $325,520 per catch or $21,001 per receiving yard. That is not value you want to get out of a wide receiver. So minimal at best. Again, I think he's aiming for the 2020 Olympics. I don't know what's going to happen with the coronavirus, which you sound like you have right now.
Kids.
I don't think the trade value is much. Again, this is another one where Shanahan refuses to move on from a guy, and he came out and said, like, oh, we don't want to cut him. He's too good. 12 catches for 186 yards and one touchdown.
That's minimal to no production. Yeah. No, that could be coach speak too, but I'm with you. Trade value, very minimal, 6th, 7th round conditional pick. It's trade. Dante Pettis being challenged again in the media to step it up. You know, his 2020 season depends on it. Where are we with Dante Pettis?
He better ball out or he's gone. That's
ball out in training camp or ball out next season?
Ball out in training camp.
Okay.
He's got to show up. He's got to show up bigger. He's got to show up stronger. He's got to show up looking like he gives a shit in drills. I'm sure Dante Pettis is a very nice guy. I'm sure he tries really hard. But if you're getting on video by Matt Maiocco of just what looks like half-assing your drills, that spreads like wildfire, man. Perception is reality, right? Whatever the fans see, whatever we see, and we see you being inactive on the Super Bowl Sunday, we see him not playing snaps, not playing any meaningful snaps, playing one or two snaps at the end of the game because they need a fresh pair of legs. It doesn't bode well for the guy. They're challenging him in the media. This is the second time they've done it. You know, Kyle Shanahan did it last year at the end of training camp, and I thought that might light a fire on him. It didn't. I don't know what we're getting from Dante Pettis. Look, he's Solomon Thomas to me. Any production they can get out of him is cool. Found money. But those two guys, if the 49ers move on from him, I will not lose any sleep at night.
Yeah, and lastly, vote of confidence from Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch on Jimmy Garoppolo. You and I know that's a non-story, but for everybody else, it seems to be, oh, they need to trade him, they need to cut him, they need to get Tom Brady. I think we both were vindicated on this when it was said repeatedly by John and Kyle. Enough with the Jimmy slander.
Yeah, sickening that they even needed to come out and say it. Like, I'm
why? Enough.
Why is that a question? Why is it still an issue? The Cowboys aren't going to pay Dak Prescott, and people are mad that the 49ers paid Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, I don't know how this. Like, there's teams that are just. I can't do it, man. I can't keep doing this. It's such a dead horse argument because it's a 24-hour news cycle, and there's nothing to stop people from just running their mouths and their brains and to their Twitter fingers going crazy. Other teams would absolutely love to have Jimmy Garoppolo. I would say about 20 other teams in the league would be like, we will take him over our situation right now, his contract included.
Oh, yeah.
So just get that out of your head right now. Done. Finito. Move on. The fact that they had to give the vote of confidence is sickening to me.
And every metric gives you a quarterback in the top 10 to 12, so... There's not much left to discuss with Jimmy Garoppolo. It is what it is. He's a winner. Took his team to the Super Bowl. Carried them during their worst defensive stretch of the season. Got the job done multiple times. Just one pass away from getting a Super Bowl. Let's just be real. Yeah. But Combine is here.
Before we get in the Combine, I'm going to go on a little bit of a rant. Jimmy stuff got me fired up a little bit.
Go ahead.
Feel myself. I'm a little fired up.
He's not really feeling himself.
Now, the CBA, so the Collective Bargaining Agreement, was just approved by the NFL Players Association board to be voted on by players. Some of the major things that are coming out of that CBA is it's going to be a 17-game. This all starts in 2021. So when the current CBA expires, Collective Bargaining Agreement expires, in 2021 they're going to roll over into this one. The owners proposed it. It was voted to pass by the players' board of the NFLPA, and it's now gone to a simple majority vote for players. If they have 1,500 votes for yes and 1,499 for no, it passes. That's what it is. There's no electoral college. There's nothing. It's simple majority vote. Here's some things that they are laid out. They want to do a 17-game schedule. They want to expand to that 7 playoff teams. They do not want to give an additional bye week. They want to increase the revenue share for the players from like 48% to 48.5% with an option to go up from there. Money, basically money for the players. They want to increase the roster size to 55 but still have 7 inactive. So your active game day goes from, 46 to 48. Not very much of an increase. They want to reduce preseason games to 3 because they're putting in another regular season game, so they're not reducing any of the games. They want to reduce padded practices. Those are the biggest talking points right now. I'm going to go on a little bit of a rant because this is a horseshit offer from the owners. This is a shameless cash grab. And people are sitting there jumping in my mentions saying, hey, look, they're getting paid more. Who cares? The players should care. The players should care. Absolutely care. And the problem is the owners are trying to divide the players. What they're trying to do is they're trying to pit the aging, not the aging veterans, but the veterans that have had 2-3 contracts. The Russell Wilsons, the Marquise Pounceys, the Richard Shermans, all these guys have come out and publicly said no. Aaron Rodgers said no. These guys have been paid. What these junior players see is extra money. The average NFL lifespan is about 3 seasons, right? That's what the average guys last for. So they're seeing immediate returns. Immediate returns. The problem is the vested veterans know that's a bad deal. This is what happens every single time. Every single time the CBA rolls around, they pit the young guys who aren't going to be in the league long against the older veterans who know what the fuck they're talking about. And they try and separate the two by offering extra cash up front. And all these players go, you know what? That sounds good to me. extra $100,000, that sounds good to me. I would love an extra $100,000. I would. Not going to lie. But I'm not going to sacrifice the future of the sport for it. 17-game season doesn't make any goddamn sense. Not a single. You half the league's going to have an extra home game? What the hell is that? They're taking the perfect NFL schedule. Not the perfect, but pretty much the best one in pro sports. No other pro sports play odd number of games. None of them. This doesn't make any goddamn sense. Because you need to have the same number of home games for everybody. And tell me one team's going to have 9 home games this year and then 8 the next year. It's dumb. It's a shameless cash grab. The expanded playoffs we already went in on. This is a terrible deal for the players, and they're going to take it. They're going to take it because the owners have done what they always do, and that's split the players apart and pit them against each other. The only thing that the players can do right now is they need to strike, and they need to have their veterans take care of the young guys. Just like Marquise Pouncey said, he went on a rant in his car. If you need rent money, come find me. I got you. We got you. We've got that extra money. We will take care of you until this figures itself out. Because the talent pool isn't there for the NFL to recover. It's not. If the players don't play, the NFL is done. Because otherwise you're going to get this stupid XFL product. They only have 8 teams and they can't even find 8 competent quarterbacks. The hell is the NFL going to do when they need to find 32 competent ones? It's not going to happen. The product is going to suffer, and it's going to be bad. Shameless cash grab by the owners. Players need to strike. I'm so done with these people saying, well, the owners, people are siding with billionaires over millionaires, and not, most of the time it's not even millionaires. You're siding with billionaires if you side with the owners. It's bullshit.
No, I completely agree, and you're seeing it now on Twitter. It's starting to play out, guys, you know, going after each other. Nick Sundberg versus Robert Griffin III. Robert Griffin is opposed to the CBA, whereas Nick Sundberg is in favor of the CBA approval. And those are guys that are lower level on the contract totem pole, you know, a long snapper and a third string quarterback. You know, they're having differences of opinion here. And that's kind of the issue with the CBA. You have your top 10 to 12 guys on every team who are making very good money, and then the rest of the guys are kind of, you know, I mean, they're still making good money, but relative to the league, they're not making top-tier money. So a work stoppage could hurt them and affect them negatively. So I understand that. And as far as the union goes, and, you know, if there is a work stoppage, you know, there's the fear of, well, there's always college kids coming in. The XFL has players. The AAF just had a league. The NFL could go and look at, you know, replacement players. But are you going to jeopardize your product over just having better work conditions for your employees like these players? And I think the NFL owners would do that, but they'd also be looking at a loss right away too, because who's going to – I don't want to go see XFL players play in a 49er uniform.
Yeah, I don't want to see Kyle Shanahan walking in that door.
Yeah, I don't want to see Kyle Shanahan coaching Cardale Jones. Like, that's not what I want to see. I want to see the best players on the field. I don't understand what the issue is here where they just can't go 50-50 like baseball, like basketball. Get these guys some better pension programs. Get these guys some better health care. Mm-hmm. We all work. Most of us work who listen. You have your health care, some better than others, but you get it from your employee, your employer. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be retiring, you have your retirement set. If you planned accordingly, you have a good retirement setup, and most of these players are trying to get those things in place for themselves as well. They're entitled to those things too, because a lot of times, a lot of these guys don't do anything after they retire besides go on radio tours like Joe Montana. Do you think Joe Montana's working a 9-to-5 job? No. The way he makes his money is Super Bowl week, media row, or whatever the hell that shit's called. You know, other guys, they end up doing their own businesses and things like that later on, but you should take care of your employees, and that's just... The Niners have the Golden Heart Foundation. The Steelers are paying Ryan Shazier. They're keeping him on the roster so that way he can still get the best treatment possible. Like, when they leave the league, they don't have the access to these treatment programs. Jet McKinnon, the Niners could have cut him. They didn't. He's on the team. He's getting the best treatment possible. Ryan Shazier, he's basically almost paralyzed. He's walking again. He wants to play. But I doubt that's going to happen. But he's getting his treatment from the facility and from the Steelers, and it's just the right thing to do. Like, just it's just proper ethics, you know. Do the right thing by these guys who are creating these billions of dollars for these owners, for the commissioner, for these TV networks. You know, I'm not the person like, oh, kill all millionaires, you know what I mean? But these guys deserve proper working conditions, whether we agree with that or not. You know, as fans, it's just, you know, we don't know what these guys go through every day. We don't know their situation fully, but we can see from an outside perspective and read these documents and understand, okay, some of this makes sense, some of this doesn't. So I fully get it. I'm pro player, and I'm with the guys who are saying no to the CBA.
Yeah, and it's a 10-year deal. That's the other thing. This is 10 years. If they don't get something like lifelong health care, they can't negotiate that for another 10 years. There needs to be more. It's just such a goddamn shameless cash grab by the owners. And I can't get over it. You know what? The only way I'm going to get over it is by moving on. So, because otherwise I'm gonna lose my mind for the rest of the night. So the combine's getting ready to start. You know, some of the drills have started. All the measurements are starting to come in. So we're gonna give you guys a little list of our pre-combine crushes. And the reason we are doing a pre-combine crush list is because last year, some of y'all were listening, like all 17 of you that listened when we first started last year, might remember I was extremely high on a certain player. By the name of Ja'Kai Polite.
Man.
I was extremely high on him. And then he goes to the combine and he bombs. He shows up overweight. He runs slow. He has terrible interviews. He cries that the 49ers made fun of him and said that he was and just asked him questions. And then he tumbles from a guy that should have been a top 10 pick down to the third round. He's drafted by the Jets and he's cut by the Jets. He ends up on the Seattle practice squad. So we're doing pre-combine crushes so we can establish this so that if anybody fucks it away this weekend, we reserve the right to change our draft crushes. So, Javi, why don't you hit me with your first one? Who's somebody that you're really high on right now before the combine?
So the way I did my list, I tried to do it to where, based on where the Niners were drafting, without any trades, without anything extra. There's two guys that I think the Niners could take at 31. I'll start off with the first one, and I think it's a position of need because we don't know what's going to happen with Jimmy Ward. And my guy is Antoine Winfield from Minnesota, free safety. I think he's one of the better safeties in this draft. And by all projections from guys who get paid more than I do to do this, they show him between that 31 and 50 pick range. What I like about Winfield, he's a big hitter. He's a ball hawk. He turns the ball over. That's something we lack at the safety position. He reminds me, people will hate that I say it, but he reminds me of Earl Thomas, just the way he's built. He's 5'10". I thought he was a thumper all season. He gave my Penn State Nittany Lions fits when the Penn State played them. He's 5'10", 195. He's a redshirt sophomore from Minnesota. Tackling, you know, he's a little bit late to drop his head, but he's a sure tackler. That's another positive with him. Really good ball skills, really good zone coverage skills. He's flexible, he's versatile, can play a multitude of different spots from deep free safety to if you need to bring him in the box, similar to Earl. There's some things there that I really, really like. He's my favorite safety in this draft. The worst thing that I saw was just his. He's a little bit heavy-footed, so he's not the fastest guy. He can go sideline to sideline, but if you're going vertical with him, that may be something that may cause an issue for this Niner team if they were to draft him. So that would be a point of concern. But other than that, everything looked good on him. If you look at the Draft Network, they do a really good job over there. I just mentioned Penn State. They have that as their best film on him, and I thought he had a monster game against Penn State. So Antoine Winfield Jr. is my first draft crush. He's been my draft crush since that game, especially if we don't know what's going to happen with Jimmy Ward.
Yeah, so I'm going to stick with the safety position. And now the way I do my draft crushes, I don't necessarily look at guys that I think the Niners are going to draft or have a chance of drafting. I generally look at positions of need for the 49ers and go from there, and I start to pick some of my favorite players. I'm going to stick with safety, and mine is Xavier McKinney out of Alabama. He's 6'1", 200 pounds. And he just reminds me of Minka Fitzpatrick, of Honey Badger, this versatile jackknife that you can use in the secondary. He can cover the slot. He can thump. He can blitz. He can play deep. He can do a little bit of everything. He's a big ball hawk. Xavier McKinney, he just checks all the boxes for me, right? He works hard. He has no red flags. He's not going to be there at 31. He's like, let's be real. He's not going to be there at 31, depending on how he tests out this week and then again in his pro day at Alabama. He's going to be a top 20 pick. He should be. But this is my guy this year. This is the guy I'm latching on to that I'm really, really rooting for. And I think he's going to be a game changer on defense for whoever takes him. You mentioned the Draft Network and how good of a job they do breaking it down. They said his best film was this year against LSU, and LSU just won the national championship game. You know, he did a really good job against them. And his worst film came in 2018. If you have to go back a season to get bad tape on a player before the NFL, that's a really, really, really good thing. And that was against Clemson. And who didn't look bad against Clemson in 2018? Trevor yeah. Lawrence made everybody look silly. So yeah. it's Xavier McKinney for me. I think he's the guy that just – he's – the jack of all trades. He's a Swiss Army knife. He's someone you can use everywhere. And I love that kind of versatility in the secondary. It's what I wish Jaquaski Tartt was, basically. It's Jaquaski Tartt with the ball hawk skills. That's what he is to me. That's how versatile he is, and that's how well he could fit into the 49ers defense. Again, I don't think he's there, but he's my number one draft crush. It's not even close this year.
Yeah, we can agree. Safety position is a position of need. It's also a reason to have a crush. And the turnovers that both these guys generate is going to be something the Niners need to improve on going into next year. Another position of need, and I think that's debatable amongst 49ers fans because we don't know what's going to happen to Trent Taylor. We don't know what's going to happen to Jalen Hurd. But we have two functional wide receivers on this roster right now. Deebo Samuel's... Kendrick Bourne. Those are the two functional guys right now.
And Sanders Kendrick Bourne's even a restricted free agent, yeah.
Yeah, and Emmanuel Sanders is a free agent. Richie James, we don't know what's going on there. Dante Pettis, we talked about it already. So there's just things there. So my second crush is Brandon Ayuk. I don't know how to pronounce the last name. From Arizona State. 6 foot, 201 pounds. He is Odell Beckham to me. And I know that may be a crazy comp for some people, but he runs like him. He moves like him. There's a lot of ability there that makes me think this guy could be explosive in this 49ers offense. I want to say he was the third highest yards after catch college receiver last year. He can give you anything in the return game. He's excellent in the tunnel screen game. He's a good blocker downfield. The only issue I saw with him was beating man coverage, and we know Kyle Shanahan wants his receivers to beat man coverage. If that's something that he can improve on, then we may have another solid wide receiver. And I'm dying, like every 49er fan out there, to have two guys that can give you 800, 900, 1,000 yards on a year-in, year-out basis. It's been so long since Terrell Owens, Jerry Rice. The Niners need something there that they bring in on their own. Deebo Samuels has started on the right foot, and to add a speed guy like Brandon Ayuk would be ideal. His vertical receiving skills is amazing. The man has a second, third gear that he gets off that could just take this offense to another level. We talked about it after the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. The Niners are missing that vertical threat, and this could be a guy that can do that. I'm excited to watch his combine. I'm excited to watch his 40. I want to see where he's at. And I think the Niners, from what he had mentioned in his press conference, he did have an informal meeting with the Niners already.
Yeah, so I'm just going to stick with wide receiver, too. So I'm just going to kind of mirror you here. A different guy, and that's Denzel Mims from Baylor. Wide receiver, he's 6'3", just over 200 pounds. Big body target, insane catch radius. The guy, he catches everything that's somewhat in his orbit. But my favorite thing he does, he's George Kittle as a wide receiver. He blocks dudes into the dirt. He absolutely demolishes secondary corners, safeties, whatever it is, at the second level as a blocker, and we know how much the 49ers love to run the ball. I think they're, as much as they're missing a speed guy in their offense, I think they're also missing a actual big body guy. Kendrick Bourne plays big, but he's 6 foot tall. I think they need someone that is actually big, actually tall, actually able to go up and win 50-50 balls, actually able to do that. And Denzel Mims, he, again, just one of those guys that can do that. And his run blocking is insane. If you don't follow Jim Nagy on Twitter, he's the guy that runs the Senior Bowl. And he posts a lot of Senior Bowl highlights and clips and stuff. And he posted like this montage of Denzel Mims just destroying corners in the Senior Bowl game itself, where he's just running guys out of bounds or pancaking them or doing whatever he has to do. He's big, he's physical, and it's a receiver type the 49ers haven't had in a very long time. And I would and like to
separate.
See him. He can't separate. His long speed is really good. Not super quick, not super agile. He's got kind of a limited route tree. But that they don't necessarily need a guy that can run every route because, you know, they have Deebo Samuel, they have Kendrick Bourne who can do all that stuff. I think they just need someone that can stretch the field a little bit, win 50-50 balls, and be trusted to be a blocker on the outside on run plays just to give them that extra oomph in run plays. So Denzel Mims also making my list. And just so you know, my list is very out of order after Xavier McKinney. Xavier McKinney is one. Everybody else is just kind of muddled in there somewhere. So Xavier McKinney one, everybody else. So, but Denzel Mims is the second guy I'm taking as a pre-combine draft crush.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I like Mims as well. Baylor kid. I was watching while you were talking. Definitely some really good tape there. My other guy is another need that's going to come up next season, and I think the Niners are going to be preparing for that. Cornerback, and I know we texted earlier on this. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to go with Michael Ojemudia. From Iowa, another Big Ten guy, 6 foot, 199. He is a zone coverage safety. The Niners play a lot of zone. This is what the Niners need. Good ball skills, flexible, has really good hips. Long speed is going to be the issue with him, kind of like a Richard Sherman. Not saying he's slow to the extent of Richard Sherman, but that could be something that hurts him. But he's really good in zone coverage. That, you know, may not be a huge issue since they don't play so much man. He's a good tackler, very good in run support. There's just something about this kid. Every time I watch him, I'm like, damn, this kid can hit. Damn, he's physical. He puts his hands on receivers. He doesn't get a lot of penalties. It's just the issue is with the speed, and that may be something that comes to bite the Niners in the butt. Again, I'm not trying to pick slow guys here, but I'm looking for guys to fit a certain profile for this Niners defense. You see a lot of tough guys on this Niners defense, whether that's Greenlaw, Warner, Kwon, Sherman's a solid tackler. Emmanuel Mosey doesn't give a shit. He's going to put his nose in it. Jimmy Ward and Kwaski Tart hit with purpose. And Michael Ojemudia, if I'm pronouncing that right, is one of those guys that can hit. He's a sure tackler, and that's something the Niners need there. And, you know, when you're – I think with quarterback speed, yes, it's nice to have it, the long speed. But – if the Niners maintain this pass rush, then it allows these corners to play not as, you know, they don't have to bail so much. They can stay yep. as close as possible, and these offenses aren't having these long developing routes develop against them because the pass rush is getting there. So if you can tie the pass rush to the coverage, that's where a guy like him would fit in. He fits the scheme, he fits the profile for this Niners defense, and I really like this kid from Iowa.
Yeah, I have a corner on my list, but I'm going to save him for the end, and you know why.
Yeah.
You know why I'm saving the corner for the end of my list. So I'm going to go with another position I think is a need, interior offensive line. This kid projects as a center. He's only ever played center. I'm not sure if he could switch to guard or not, but Matt Hennessy out of Temple, small school guy. He made it to the Senior Bowl. Look, this guy is consistent. He's very consistent. He has great body control. He does a good job of keeping people in front of him. He's a surprisingly good pass blocker. He wore a single digit practice squad jersey. Excuse me, not a practice squad, but practice jersey at Temple. And you know, those jerseys aren't given out lightly, right? Especially to offensive linemen, to earn a single digit for practice is crazy. You almost never hear of it. I'm a huge fan of this guy. He's built for a zone scheme. he doesn't have a tremendous amount of power, but that's not something that Kyle Shanahan needs from his interior offensive line. He needs a lot of technique, and that's what this kid can do. His tape at the Senior Bowl is great. He does everything right. He's not flashy. He doesn't jump off the screen when you watch him. And he's another guy where you have to go back to 2018 to find his worst film. And again, this is a guy playing against not top tier talent. That's fine. I understand it. But if you have the skills and you have the technique, you can make it at the next level. The guys that don't make it from lower tier competition are the ones that rely solely on their athleticism. And that's not something Matt Hennessy does. Matt Hennessy is a technician through and through, immediate starter on the inside. If the 49ers are even the slightest bit worried about Person or Tomlinson or Richburg, this is a kid they need to have on their radar. They won't get him in the fifth round. They're going to have to trade out of 31, come back and get him, trade Armstead, whatever it is. He's not going to be there in the fifth round. This kid is an immediate day one starter, and I think this might be the guy I'm one of the highest on out of everybody this year, because I think for what value he's going to bring for when he's drafted, he's going to be an immediate impact starter. That's how high on his Hennessy kid.
Yeah, I'm with you. I liked him. I watched a lot of his stuff, and you know, we don't know what's going to happen with Richburg. We don't know what's going to happen with Person, and there's always room to improve that offensive line. And if it's a guy like that, then why not? The other guy, what would a 49ers draft be without a hybrid type guy?
Naturally.
My next guy is Antoine Brooks. He is a safety converted linebacker. Ring a bell. Dre Greenlaw, similar situation mm-hmm. there. He provides a versatility factor as a nickel linebacker. Or he can play a slot. He can cover tight ends. He can cover wide receivers. I want to see his. I don't know if he made the combine. I didn't check. Really good man coverage skills, which is really, really unique for a guy who's 5'11", 213. He does well in man coverage. Anyone who's watched the Niners, what can all three linebackers do? They can cover.
Cover and run.
And Warner. So, you know, you want to have that depth. The continued depth on this team is going to be getting guys this late in the draft. So this guy could be a sixth or seventh round guy. We don't know what's going to happen with Elijah Lee or Mark Nzacha, so why not bring in the replacement there? Could be special teams guy first. And then, of course, if you need, God forbid, anything happens, you've started this developmental project with a guy like him. I'm not saying – I just like to tape ball skills. He just makes plays. Every time I've watched him, he made plays. Really good in zone, really good in man for a linebacker / safety. I thought he was solid. 5'11", 213, you know, I'm sure he can gain a little bit of weight. He can't really grow as far as height goes, but
right.
he's right around that Dre Greenlaw profile. I think Greenlaw at the end of the season was probably like 230, so, mm-hmm. you know, maybe another 15 to 20 pounds, and you have yourself a really good Sam linebacker. If anyone reads these contracts, Quan Alexander could be gone next season because the outs they constructed in these contracts. So you want to – I'm looking – this year plus next year, you know, trying to keep this roster turning and keeping the depth going. So Antoine Brooks Jr. out of Maryland, another Big Ten kid. I really liked his tape. I thought he showed a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to stick a wide receiver for my next one. This is a guy that friend of the pod, Zach Pratt, turned me on to. This guy named James Prosh. I think it's Prosh, out of SMU, Southern Methodist. He's Trent Taylor if he was 2 inches taller. Excuse me, if he was 4 inches taller, because he's 5'11". He's that quick, shifty slot receiver. I think that was a big part of the offense that was missing this year. I think they had a giant system in place for both Jalen Hurd and for Trent Taylor out of the slot. I think Shanahan had that carved out in his offense, that's what he was going to use those guys to get key first downs, whether it was third and short or third and medium. I think he had specific plays drawn up, and then no one could step up and make those plays. I think Richie James is on his way out. Trent Taylor, I love Trent Taylor. I bought his jersey almost as soon as he was drafted. That's how much I loved him. I don't know if we ever see him play again. That foot injury just sounded miserable. 5 surgeries, had to have a screw inserted and then pulled out and then reinserted, all sorts. I hope Trent Taylor is good and 100% ready to go, but I don't know if he ever is going to play another snap in a 49ers uniform. And if the 49ers feel the same way, James Proche might be the way to go. Shifty, slot wide receiver, not top-end speed, but he's quick enough to make people miss. He's just, I think the way Pratt made him sound, he's just like if Wes Welker had size. Wes Welker is a coach on the 49ers. He's a wide receivers coach on the 49ers. Pair these two together. Let's just let him go. James Proche, SMU, Southern Methodist. Check the kid out. I don't know if he's at the combine. I think he is. He's one of those guys that might be there, might not. But he's one of the guys that I'm really high on.
Yeah, I liked him too. I thought he was pretty solid. There's a lot of wide receivers in this class, man. I think the Niners are going to have to take one at the very least.
At least.
No matter where they are. My last guy, I'm changing him. I was going to focus on the offensive tackle position, but I'm going to be a little bit more like crushy here. Julian Okwara from Notre Dame, pass rusher. Niner fans are going to kill me. Why are you taking another pass rusher? If he's there at 31, just take him.
Can never have too many.
And the thing I say, the reason I say that is we saw the drop-off with D Ford. D Ford off the field, you saw the drop-off in production from the defensive line. Julian could be your next D Ford at a cheaper price for the next 3-4 years. He plays with his hands on the ground. He plays standing up because he can play the 3-4 outside linebacker position. So he's a guy that can bend the edge and bend the arc. Every time I saw him bending, he's making these tackles look stupid. And that's similar to what D Ford was doing, you know, bending the edge, and he can come in on stunts. He does fairly well there. You need to keep this roster turning. If you want to stay consistent, if you want to keep making the playoffs every year, you have to do that. He has really good hand techniques, pass rush counters. He has a couple rips and dips. He's got some really good hand movement. Who else has hand movement? Oh, Nick Bosa. So you want to keep, you want to have stuff like that. He's pretty polished, which is a plus. You want to have guys come in right away. The only thing that I noticed, he's a little light in the ass, meaning he needs to gain a little bit of weight. If bigger tackles may be able to move him off the ball. We see that with D4 too. So just maybe gain a little bit more weight, maybe a little more functional strength. Some more push-ups and mayonnaise sandwiches. He should be fine. run defending, I saw he was pretty good at that. I really like this kid. The worst game you're going to see against him is the one that I thought was pretty bad, was Georgia, and that's when he's going against probably a top five pick at tackle. So there's some bad tape there, but I thought he did fairly well all season and all his career at Notre Dame. And could be a guy that could be, you know, the next guy after Ford. Because, again, a guy like Ford is a guy that can be moved off of after this coming season. So the Niners have set themselves up to replace these guys and do so with this draft or the next one. But I think if you have the ability to take a guy who's similar to someone you already have in that role, have them sit, develop, and the Niners have that luxury now with, you know, God forbid they don't have any major injuries, but they have the ability to do that, to let a guy sit, learn, play minimal snaps, be a situational type guy to where they're getting these snaps. And you saw that last year with Dre Greenlaw. He came in as a Sam linebacker. Quan gets hurt. He replaces him. You don't see too much of a drop-off there. He's only going to get better. So I'm viewing that as a similar situation with Julian Okwara.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. You can never have too many pass rushers. It's something you need to replenish all the time. It's like, to me, it's wide receivers and pass rushers are the guys that you're always going to try and bring in. And with Shanahan, you always want to bring in a running back undrafted at some point, right? But what would draft season be here at the Fourth and Gold podcast if I didn't have a JMU corner that I'm all about? Last year was Jimmy fucking Moreland. This year, Rashad Robinson, not Rashard. Don't have flashbacks to the kid from LSU that pass interfered with every single player he ever covered. This is Rashad Robinson. Him and Jimmy Moreland were actually supposed to come out in the same class. Robinson had a bad turf toe injury that cost him the entire 2018 season, so he was able to return for the season this year. In 2017, he had 7 interceptions. This year, he had 4. He's a ball hawk. He's 5'11", 188 pounds. He plays bigger than his frame. He's a guy that you can get in the 7th round. He's a guy that you can get undrafted, that you can bring in and compete. I'm not as high on him as I was on Jimmy Moreland because he doesn't cause the turnovers like Jimmy did. But I'm still very confident that if he can get back to what he was probably a third, fourth round pick if he doesn't get that turf toe injury. That's how good he was in 2017. So I think he can be that good again. Just needs the right team to go to, and I think a team that has a dynamic pass rush like the 49ers can be that team. So Rashad Robinson from James Madison, go Dukes. Keep your eye on him. It's somebody to watch. He is not at the combine, so the 49ers are going to have to send somebody to his pro day to do this. So Rashad Robinson, cornerback, James Madison Dukes.
JMU, baby. JMU. That does it. You know, this combine is going to be fun to watch. There's a lot of wide receivers. There's a lot of speed this draft. There's a lot of talk on what the Niners are going to do, and we'll hear more about that in the next coming days. But I'm excited for this draft. I want to see – we've seen John Lynch and Kyle draft with early picks. I want to see how they do with late picks in each round. Mm-hmm. And I want to see how they maneuver around this first round and the second round and the third round to get some things done. We'll be back before the combine to talk about mock drafts and things like that going forward. And hopefully the CBA gets cleared up in a way that the players can benefit, and that way we can talk free agency and get these contracts signed up. I mean, I'm not signing them, but we can review these contracts and things like that. But I'm Javi. That is Matt. Catch the podcast on all podcast platforms. Follow us on Twitter. Follow myself at @JavierVague_. Follow Matt.
@MattBarr_.
And then follow the podcast at 4th and Goal Podcast on Twitter. Subscribe, rate, review on all podcast platforms. We'll be back next week to review the combine, and hopefully none of our guys that we liked tanked. But until then, go Niners. Peace.